Off, episode 33, Wrecked Radio. I think it's 33, right, guys?
You're asking the wrong people.
33. Well, the good news is
you're asking the right people, but I just don't know.
We just re-upped with Robin.
You're asking the wrong person. I love that. That's one of the three co-hosts, just asking the wrong person.
Yeah, right? I don't know who's supposed to know. Sims, you're back there. Is it 33? It's 33. But anyway, we got 13 more episodes sponsored by Rollbit here. As you can see, I'm wearing the swag.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah, look at that. But yeah, that's amazing. They're going to up our prizes, too. We're going to be doing loot boxes at the end of the show, like all time. And we're thinking of some creative ways to maybe get some other kind of prizes going. We have some autonomy and what to do with the extra cash. So if you have any ideas, definitely
I think down. We should just invite Rookie on each week, you know?
Yeah, just... apparently just invite Rookie on. I mean, he's like Midas with trading. The other day, he turned a 50K trading account when he was like drinking in Portugal to 800K in one day. So, I mean, what? Like, it's just like across everything. He's just like touched by God right now. The trading gods, the gambling gods. I don't know. It's something. It's a sight to behold. We're witnessing, you know, young Midas. But anyway. Let's get the codes out of the way first and talk about our sponsor a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, guys. As you know, this show is sponsored by Rollbit, one of the largest crypto casinos out there. You can do everything from casino games, sports betting, NFT borrowing, lending, trading, and crypto futures trading as well. So be sure to check out rollbit.com or rollbot.com, depending on your jurisdiction. As usual, we'll have a couple of codes to give out on the show. The first code is Chances6183. Chances6183. And I've shared that code on our YouTube stream as well. Check out the pinned tweet on the space if you want to watch this on video for a more visual experience. I'll pass it to KV.
So, what's new?
Man, I see your brain damaged by the current trading environment as well.
The market hasn't moved in a long time, and that's not good for me. And because I should have not traded. I said to myself, don't trade in the summer here because one, it's summer, no fucking catalyst, and here I am still trading. I don't know. I mean, I've slowed down a lot, but it's definitely like it hasn't been fun. It's kind of stressful for a summer.
More stressful. Yeah, it keeps me feeling like it's gonna break out kind of, I guess, either way, but I haven't enjoyed the last couple of, even today, I was just so frustrated. Like, I was just like, why is this nothing happening? Like, it feels like also it's a prime time where you'll start like dialing up risk and then you'll just get destroyed because it'll undoubtedly move against whatever position you're trying to like dial into.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, we should just be enjoying summer. That's obvious. I mean, I guess it's not too late. We can stop. You know,
you can't look like this is the thing. Like, this is like that moment in time where it's either going to fucking rip loads higher or it's all going to crash. You can't just like stop here and just be,
I mean, that's the problem. I mean, it's like once you commit to doing this dumb, like trying to trade this range and it's been over a month of it, you kind of have to just go all in and keep committing.
You're really telling a man that looks like he hasn't slept in about 2 weeks that he can't stop.
You know, I look like that right now. I hope not. Jesus Christ. Where are you? You're in a hotel bathroom or something, you said?
Yeah, I came back to London and I'm hanging out in London hotel bathrooms, just spending the 2 weeks seeing the sights.
That's not bad. I mean, yeah, I'm not gonna come.
London's nice. London's nice. Like central London, there's no one like it on earth, I think. No one like it on earth.
Yeah, I like London. I gotta make it back there soon. To hang out with you guys.
You were meant to come out, right? You kept on saying you would do a London trip. We'll go out.
We're still going to
card roulette again.
Yep, we're still going to. So anything else to touch on before we bring our guests in, or what are you thinking?
No, I'm excited for this. It feels like after what, a couple of weeks ago, it feels like the perfect guest to bring on, and
he had a
wild summer, so it feels like good timing as well.
Yeah, why don't we bring Chance on right now? We got Chance Corneth here on the show. Welcome, Chance.
Thank you.
How you doing?
I'm great. Just trying to get back in the swing of like family life and, you know, being home in Nashville and all that.
Yeah, I mean, you cut your series short, right? I think you didn't play a couple things at the end because you wanted to get back to the fam. I mean, you won enough money anyway. You didn't need to abuse any more people out there.
I really wanted to abuse more people, but man, I got tired.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I was only out there a week and I was tired. It's definitely a grind. Like,
It takes a lot out of you.
Like, you're bouncing from one tournament. If it ends or you get busted, you just go to another one, right? I mean, like, you're just full out. You set a schedule for that. You're just all in.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would set a schedule like before the summer would start, and so it's pretty easy for me to reference, like, if I busted the, you know, the 50K or whatever, like, what I was going to go play next. And sometimes it was like a $1,500 or 2K, and sometimes it was like wait a day for the next like big high roller. And there was very, you know, I was lucky enough to like keep going deep, so there's very little waiting between days. So a lot of long days and sleepless nights. You know,
That's
anxious.
I mean, you had a pretty amazing summer. Was that your best summer ever or at the
World? Oh, yeah, by far.
By far. Yeah. So if anyone doesn't know, Chance maybe hit three or four final tables? I don't know.
I think it was six or seven.
Six or seven. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That's pretty hard.
You won
the first win, 1500, right?
Yeah. It was like second in that first 25K for 750, and then fourth in the 100K, fifth in the 250K, and then I won that 2200 at the win, and then fourth in the 3200 online high roller, and ninth in the 25K
PLO. I mean, that's such a sick run.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, like, just making day three of the main, I was getting going. I can only imagine going deep in like a WSOP event or even the win event, how that feels. And I mean,
you just gotta play more. You gotta stick it out.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong.
Do you think that's what you did? Did you play just more tournaments this year, or was it just like you felt like you were on a roll?
Oh no, I played significantly better. Obviously, I like ran incredibly well. Like having a bunch of like big value hands and, you know, deep makes a big difference. But like getting bluffs through, and, you know, sometimes waking up with big hands at the right time. But like overall, I like played really well as well. And like I would give up on hands when I didn't think they were going to work, and I would go for big bluffs when I did think they were going to work, and had a pretty high success rate. So that definitely makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Should we maybe get into like how it all started for you? Like, obviously now you're seeing like massive success this summer, but obviously that wasn't originally the case. And you've been consistently, I don't know, successful for a while though. How did you first get into poker? How did that? I know you now live in Nashville. You used to live in Vegas, I think. I thought I read.
Yeah.
How did it all happen?
I mean, I first started playing poker with like family when we were like super little, and then like found Element Hold'em when Moneymaker won like 20 years ago, and started playing in high school with friends soon after that. And in college, like I started to make money on it or playing, and like I was really attracted to the fact that like if you work hard, you make more money, you can play higher stakes and like effectively promote yourself. And then was fortunate enough to keep doing well. And then I had a math professor in college who I was talking to about it, that I was like pretty good friends with. And he was like, why are you still here? He's like, you enjoy it. You're making good money at it. He's like, you can always like come back to school. He's like, give it a shot. And like, I kind of already wanted to, but that was like the push in the right direction that I needed. And the rest is kind of history.
You moved straight to Vegas from college. Did you say you dropped out of college or no?
With a semester shy in graduation from a degree in architectural engineering, I went to Vegas with like 40 grand. I had like 50 or 60 at the time, and met Ben Lamb. We became like friends pretty quickly, and I moved in with him a month later and like packed up all my shit, and that was it.
I love it. The fast life.
Yeah. And we lived on the strip and like raged pretty hard for like those first few years. So it was nice to like move off the strip and like have a normal-ish life in Vegas, and
yeah, I feel like that'd be hard. I don't know. I mean, having a normal-ish life in Vegas, I don't know. Maybe I just don't have the mindset for it.
It's difficult, man.
Yeah, I know. Even like, you know, staying in before the WSOP mains and stuff, I was like, oh god. But I mean, I guess I was only there for a week. Maybe when you live there, you get a little desensitized from the madness.
Yeah, I mean, sleep's so important. Like, this was the first summer I was able to remain completely sober. And, like, I started to find sobriety, like, 2.5 years when my daughter was born. And, you know, for people like you and me who, like to rage and drink and gamble and have fun, Vegas has all of those options at all times. So it makes it even, like, more difficult to stay focused and play your best.
Yeah. I mean, staying sober is definitely key, especially with the grind and all that stuff. I mean, so you've been sober. You quit. I think last time I spoke to you, you have like a last longer gambling bet, right? Because I know.
Yeah, I have a 10-year, 10K no pitch bet. So I think it's 7 years this fall at this upcoming Florida stop. I don't know if you're coming to that one again. But, yeah, I mean, they're 6 or 7 years in. It's with Sean Deeb. And he basically did it in the hopes to lose that I would, like, better my life. But, you know, I think maybe he thought he had an edge or maybe thought it was, like, break even. But, yeah, I truly believe he did it to help me. You know, like, drinking, being casinos, we have all of our money in boxes as poker players sometimes. And, like, that can be a recipe for disaster. So, fortunately, I quit the pits. And 3 or 4 years after that, I quit drinking. And it's been pretty good since then.
Do you have any stories of that come up with Ben? Like, any moments where you kind of started to make it, or like the big wins you had on that like initial journey?
The way I like met him and became friends with him is pretty good. Like, we were playing this like super tough 3K at Fontana Lounge at Bellagio that used to be like, it's that club now. And he was like raised folding every hand, and he like folded under the gun, and the cards like kind of like sailed across the table and like got exposed, and it was like ace 10 or ace jack. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, why would this guy fold this hand? He's playing every single hand. And I look at him and I'm like, you did that on purpose. And he goes, I'm Ben, we need to be friends. And that was like literally when I like moved in with him a month later. And you know, like, we used to just like grind online like crazy, and then go out to the clubs like crazy. And those were definitely a fun few years, and won't forget them.
Did you have any moments where you, like you said, like, you have all your money in a box at a casino? Did you ever come close to like hurting your bankroll? Was it, were any like,
oh yeah, tight moments? I mean, I hurt my bankroll like multiple times. Like some real self-harm bankroll wise for sure. Where like you think the count's good, right? Which means you have like a 1% edge. And you just like hold the deck, and I would run to my box like blackout drunk and grab like a stack of 5Ks and bye bye.
Yeah, fuck. Those good counts are deceiving.
Yeah, and when I actually quit, I like playing blackjack and stuff. I got like blackout drunk 6 nights in a row in Florida at that Seminole Casino, and I won every single night. I ended up winning like 265K. And the next day, that's when Sean was like, you got to quit him now. And I was like, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. And that was when the bet came about. And haven't gambled in the pit since then.
Yeah. Maybe I need to talk to Sean and get a blast longer, or to get one from you. I don't know.
Seems, I mean, like, he'll definitely give it to you because he thinks that you can't do it.
Yeah, no, yeah, true. is he still doing that weight loss one?
He's back in action now.
Nice. I like that. Mm-hmm. Now that since we're doing chance story time here, I want to hear the Dan Bilzerian story straight from the horse's mouth here, now that we have you.
All right. It's a good one. Well, it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. My wife, Emily, and I were in Colorado visiting my dad for the first time. And I just randomly get a call from Dan Bilzerian. And I'm like, this is like kind of peculiar. And he's like, hey, like, Roble said you should coach me for this like heads up match. And I'm like, all right. And so we make a deal, and like the EV comes out to, you know, a couple thousand an hour. And I'm like, this sounds great. Like, didn't even think twice because it was a 10K free roll if he won more than a million. So I figured if he won 55% of the time, I spend 3 hours on making, you know, $1,833 an hour. Sounds great. And so it was the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and my wife's in like the mall nearby. And I'm sitting in the car talking to Dan Bilzerian. He's like, so what do I do if the guy raises to 10,000 or 100,000 on the button? Like, what can I shove? And I'm like, like, how is this real life? Like, this guy's just going to raise 100K. Like, this is the game you're playing. And I'm like, well, it depends what his calling range is. And we put it in and run it. And then, like, he could actually shove any two, because the guy was like, if he was raising 100K in the dark, he was only calling with like ace nine plus. For a million. And if that's the case, like, you're just absolutely printing with anything. And so he like talks like some random strategy, but like what really impressed me was that Dan actually had like great understanding of how his opponent played, how he would play his air, how he'd play his value, how he'd play his premiums versus three bets and four bets. And that was actually what allowed me to give him like really good advice. It's like, okay, if your opponent's like never really two barreling, then you should call one super, super wide and then, you know, bet the river when he you know, when he checks back. And like, it was just like very simple for me to give him good advice based upon how good his perception of his opponent was. And that's like one of the things that actually like separates good poker minds from bad poker minds, is like being able to form conclusions about how your opponent plays their holdings. And it's like, you're not always right, but like having that idea of how they play will at least allow you to formulate a good plan.
Yeah, who is his opponent?
Alec Goris, this like Saudi, or I don't know, some billionaire oil guy, I think.
And it ends with you like taking the hourly, and then if you would have taken,
yeah, I was about to say, like,
no, I took the 10K pre-roll, and the next morning I woke up to a text at like 4 or 5 in the morning. He's like, I owe you 10K, and I'm like, well, that just means he won more than a million. Like, I'm still like a poker fan, right? Like, I'm curious, yeah. I'm like, how much did you win? He's like, 10.8 million. Or
what the fuck? Like, maybe I was underpaid.
And this is something that wasn't in my thread on Twitter, actually, where I'm like, you got to tell me some hands. So he like calls me, and it's like Dan in his like, you know, macho, meat-heady, awesome voice. And he's like, so he's like, I make it 1.2 million with aces. And I'm like, how is this a real hand? And he's telling me like this 3-bet, 4-bet, 5-bet shit with aces, and it comes ace high. And he's like, on the turn, or yeah, like check, check, flop. On the turn, I bet $1 million. And I'm like, you just have topside, you're betting $1 million. Like, this is like the stuff dreams are made of.
He's getting paid and
shit. Yeah. It's like pretty epic.
So can I ask, like, this, like, I know this story with Dan Bilzerian is now like, I don't know, it's almost like a myth, like a legendary story. How often do you hear about that sort of story with other people? Is he like the only person that you kind of hear about this story just made like, I don't know, 40, whatever, $1 million he did from this one guy? Or is there anyone else who's had these, like, you know, off the strip games where people are just making tens of millions?
I mean, there's like a couple of poker players that come to mind that I know have done incredibly successful, like, you know, incredible success stories like that through private games. But this was like the biggest individual win that I was privy to.
Yeah, it does feel like, I mean, firstly, it sounds like the story is legit, right? Like, I think that was questioned a lot at the start. And then secondly, like, it does seem a little bit like he was one of the first or one of the only people to actually see these sort of crazy hands with what he had. That's wild. I feel like you're owed way more. Like, he must sit you out for dinner every single time he's in town.
I mean, him and I like don't really hang out outside. We both had a piece of Jay Farber when he final tabled the main, and so like we did hang out there. And I think that was before this instance. So we had already hung out. He was always like really nice to me. We had played like super high stakes once, where I cold 4-bet ace king to like 80K, and it came 10 high, and I check shoved against him, and he just like beats me into the pot with jacks and stacks me in like a 400 or 500 pair. And like, it was definitely one of the biggest hands I had played at the time, but we had always been like friendly and like partying with him and Jay around that WSOP main event final table was super fun as well.
So going back to your come up, like, and obviously now you've been really successful over the last year or two. If one of the main changes in your game, when you think back to the player you were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, like how have you changed your game? How have you changed your mindset? I know you said you obviously stopped drinking, but is there anything else that you think you've done? Or maybe that relates to how the game of poker has evolved as well.
Well, I mean, like, I have been, you know, making products and working with Foxen for a long time with the company. But I think also like, of discipline is like a muscle, and your ability to be disciplined in other areas of your life can like carry on to poker. And like, at heart, I'm still a degenerate. Like, I want to see the flop. I want to like see what comes. I want to try to make a big bluff. And so I think like being more disciplined in other areas of my life and like being a dad and stuff like that has allowed me to kind of carry forward and be more disciplined in my poker game as well.
What are the first steps to get disciplined? For someone who struggles constantly.
Gonna have a kid, he just said.
Yeah, so. Kid. I cannot drink. I mean, those sound pretty solid for discipline reasons. You got any other undercover ones?
I mean, you could work out regularly. You could meditate. You could, you know, eat right. I mean, there's just like every area of your life you can add discipline in. You could add just reading 15 minutes before bed. You can add, you know, just like... the book Atomic Habits comes to mind, where like all of those little micros add up to like real results in the long run. And like, yeah, you quit drinking for one night, it's not going to make a difference. Or you read 15 minutes before bed, it's not going to make a difference. But if you do that for a year, you're going to have read a bunch of books. You're going to have a ton of knowledge. You're going to be more disciplined. You're going to be stronger. If you've been working out, you're going to be more clear if you haven't been drinking. And, you know, it's not as glamorous and fun, but like it is those little differences that add up to major changes.
KPM's like, is there anything easier than that?
Yeah, I'm like that meme where the guy's like, how to get rich, work. It's like, oh, fuck,
Christ. It's like I gotta read every night.
Like, Jesus Christ. No, I think I try that, but I have a hard time sticking to it for some reason. I don't know.
Maybe because you have four bottles of Casa Amigos over your right shoulder.
Yes, look at, he's observant.
Takes one to know one, right? Yeah. Okay, spotted it straight away.
That's hilarious.
All right, so let's go through this summer a little bit. Like, I guess I'm trying to work out. Did you have any ritual this summer? Did you have anything that you did different that you feel like you're tapping into? Is there anything you do around tournaments that you like that you're doing slightly different, or is it just now you just feel like you got in a good flow and that it just started working for you?
I made sure I like only had to think about poker the entire time I was out there. Like before the summer started, I put my schedule together, and then for like the 25 and 50k plus buy-in level, I made like a package and sold action, some of which to Keyboard.
There you go.
And so like I didn't have to think about anything, and like I didn't. Even after I like had a big score in the first 25K, which I had obviously a much larger percentage of than the 250K, I like didn't adjust the package. I was like, all right, like I can just like have a good summer, lock up a big win. And like, you know, I didn't want to have to think about unbooking action or asking people to reduce their piece just because I was successful. And it allowed me to just be very singularly focused. You know, my wife did an amazing job of supporting from afar or when she was in Vegas and, you know, sending me snacks or meds when I got sick, and you know, having that support system, whether it's your wife, your family, or like your friends that are in town in Vegas. And like I stayed with a friend of mine who had, you know, a car and a cold plunge, and I had my own bedroom and bathroom, and I was off strip, and you know, so I had a lot of things that were working for me that allowed me to you know, be singularly focused and like just do my best to play my best every day.
Yeah, gonna go ahead, Michael.
It's such a trend now, like health of like top performers. Right? I just feel like I always hear about it. Like everyone's cutting drinking, everyone's like meditating, doing cold plunges. Like it's just become like this thing that everyone's kind of tapping into how to like perfect. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like it's similar to trading, and like I've dabbled and lost plenty, but. Like I do see the correlations where like sometimes you just like know exactly what you're doing. Like it's just so clear what the play is. And then sometimes you're just kind of grasping at straws and looking for a trade. And like, I think poker is like very similar where, you know, sometimes it's just so clear that your opponent has a good or a bad hand and so clear what you should do with your holding. And like when you are like your job is to perform mentally at a high level, you know, we can't take that for granted. And it's something that like optimizing your mind and like, making sure that you're making as good of decisions as possible is really important to what we all do.
Yeah, I think with these things, they're like very mentally intensive, and it's like very clear that if you can approach these challenges, whether it's like playing poker or making trade decisions or whatever it is, if you can approach them with like a clear mind, then you can make better decisions more consistently. And I think it's probably like scientifically proven, like doing shit like playing sports or working out or meditating, etc., are ways to like take yourself out of like a high stress situation, clear your mind, and be able to come back and perform consistently. But it's a tough one, isn't it? Because like, you know, like when you're on I feel like when I'm on a bad roll at something, I'm like, shit, I just need to spend more time doing this and put myself in more and work even harder. When it's not really the right thing sometimes, like maybe you just want to go and like, you know, fuck off and go for a walk in the woods or something and then come back and not get killed in that.
Mental resets are like really important, and whether that's like, you know, sleeping or playing a sport or watching a movie or walk in the woods or touching grass, as they like to say these days, like
grass,
like those things are really important to mentally reset, because we create all of these like memories from like a bad trade or like a bad bluff or a bad call, and you have to be able to forget those in order to get back to like what works, to get back to like the logic and stuff that you've trained over the years. And like, I made tons of mistakes this year playing poker. Like, I did a lot of stuff exceptionally well, but like, I could have played. I mean, I think I brought like the B plus game, you know, and I'm super happy with that. Like, it's hard to bring the B plus for 6 weeks. Yeah, and I'll take it. Like, you know, I had incredible results, made a bunch of money for the family, but you know, I already am thinking of like, how could I have played better? Like, what could I have done to improve my performance? And like, the results are one thing, right? But you can't really necessarily like determine the results. You can only determine the performance and the decisions that you made. And I think that like in poker specifically, there's so much luck involved that if you get hung up too much on the results, then you lose track of like the decision. And like keeping track of the decision and like, you know, when you make a mistake, forgiving yourself and not dwelling on it was like one of the things I did really well on this summer. I think that like, I mean, I bubbled the 50K PLO in a spot, sorry, keyboard, in a spot that was like clearly a mistake, but like, I wasn't gonna let that affect me from like playing well in the main or, you know, playing the next tournament well. Yeah. And like, I made tons of mistakes. I can think of like five big ones and like, just, if I'm dwelling on those mistakes, then it's going to make it so difficult for me to continue to play my best going forward.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now you're on this this role that's been, sounds like it's been consistent for a while now. Like, what's the goals or aims or targets for the rest of this year and beyond that as well going forwards? Like, what's the next thing you're trying to achieve with this like good momentum behind you?
There's a couple 25K and 50Ks in the August series in Florida. And then I'm going to play the 300K super high roller ball and the $1 million one drop in December. So pretty excited to, you know, get on the biggest stage again and see what I can do.
Do you, when you go into them, do you set yourself targets for like where you want to finish or how much you want to win? Or is it just like go out there and do, you know, maximum value extraction? Like
I mean, those are just like the results, right? The things that you can't focus on. So it's like, I want to go and focus on like playing my best. And it's like, did I play all of these spots correctly? Should I have bet an extra big blind on this hand, or did I miss a three bet, or maybe I should have passed on a three bet, or, you know, bad open? And like, was I paying really good attention? Like, one of the things I specialize in is live tells and physically reading my opponents. And in order to do that, like, I need to have such a high level of focus. Like, one of the things you'll notice is like the average poker player like looks at their hand, folds, and then just gets on their phone and like isn't paying attention. And like, for me to play my best, like, my phone's in airplane mode, it's in my backpack, I'm doing my best not to look at it, and I'm trying to perceive these patterns and pick up information on all the hands that I'm not in. And you know, that extreme focus is one of the things that separates me from, I think, like the average player or even the elites. And like, it's hard, like it's super draining. And like, I made a conscious effort before the series started. I was like, all right, I'm going to study, I'm going to do these other things. But like, when I do them, I'm going to practice like I want to play. Like, I'm going to try to put all of my focus into studying or all of my focus into working out or being with my family, because I wanted to strengthen that ability to focus, that mindfulness muscle, if you will. And you know, I was able to focus, I could have focused better, but you know, maybe I'll start practicing and getting in that mindset earlier in the future. So it's hard to say.
Yeah, that's pretty inspirational and definitely something we can all strive to do more of. Just thinking about live tells and stuff, do you have any common ones that you can share with people before they have to head to chip leader coaching?
I actually recorded a live tells product in the spring, and then after this summer, I don't think I'll ever release it.
You never really will.
Yeah.
It's too good.
Like, yeah, but like, I will say that like, you remember like those old Hemisphere magazines where it was like two black and white pictures and you had to like circle the things that were different in each one? So like, that's kind of what live tells are. And it's like, as you pay attention, you'll realize that people do things when they're strong that they don't do when they're weak, or vice versa. And you know, making those conclusions based on what you saw. It's like, and you don't have to necessarily like see someone's cards in order to figure it out. Like, if you see what someone looks like when they three bet under the gun versus when they raise the button, like, well, one's more likely to be strong than the other. So you can like make these conclusions based on incomplete information And I think that's like one of the biggest keys to Lactose.
Yeah, look, I can understand why you don't want to give them away. I thought we were going to get more than that.
You don't want to that's actually like people think it's just like the Oreo, right? Like, oh, you look at this thing on his chin. Yeah. You know? It's like, that's just not how it works. Like, the key is, and like I played with these players and these high rollers for years and years and years, and like I have notepads in my phone of like their tells, and it took me years to develop them because I'm looking at this, you know, these two images or these two short videos of them when they're strong and weak and trying to keep track of the information. And yeah, it's not so simple as to just say, oh well, yeah, like when this guy, like when people do this, they're typically weak. That's not how lactose work.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say, I know you do a lot of ghosting. If you don't, it's not live tells, what are the main things you normally help early poker players with, or poker players trying to improve their game? What are the main things that you see consistently going wrong with people?
So we have like different products on the site that I recommend for beginners. But when I do one-on-ones, I have a like 20 or 30 different topics that I've built out. Say it's like, you know, double barreling or defending the big blind and check raising with like videos attached to them. And then we can like go through those different topics. Another way I do like stuff with students is like they record online hand histories and we kind of like fast forward through it. And because if they say, I want to look at these three hands, and you're like, okay, but you didn't defend the big blind here. You missed three button opens. You did like, and so like you really need to figure out like the complete things that like make a player. And like, I think a lot of the people like don't open the button wide enough with weak players behind. And it's like, okay, if the big blind's a nit and the small blind's like not three bet bluffing you, then you should be opening a shit ton on the button. But if you have two aggressive players there, then you have to like tighten that button range. And so like people are so caught up in like, oh, well, I raised this collection of hands from the button. And it's like, but the players behind determine if that should be a wider range or a tighter range. And that's like a major issue that I see in most people's games.
Yeah, it's weird that people don't adjust to players and player type and don't pay attention to like what kind of archetypes the players are at the table. I actually like witnessed that live multiple times in World Series of Poker. When I'm paying attention, I'm like, what is this guy really gonna call off this old man? Or like, yeah. It's like, it's just such a simple thing. It's like so dumb. Like, I just can't see how they're not paying attention to that kind of shit.
But well, it's like you're not theoretically sound, but you do those things. You do those strategic adjustments incredibly well. And so like people get like either too wrapped up in the theory or too wrapped up in the strategical adjustments, and like strategical, maybe they're not a word. Like the key is to merge them and really like to be the best poker player, I think.
Yeah. So you study a lot of like GTO and all that shit at the same time, besides this strategic, you know, exploitation, I guess it is. Have you been focused on more of like the live tell stuff and strategic exploitation versus theory? I mean, it seems like theory was so big for a while. Maybe I'm just wrong because I'm not like completely in the scene, but I feel like it's kind of dropped off a little bit.
So I would say compared to the other elites, my theory is like considerably worse. I specialize in the strategic adjustments and the live tells. And so for me, I actually, when I was studying, like before in the late spring, like I was studying the theory and the GTO and like trying to get better at those aspects because that was where I was personally weakened.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen some improvements in the game from studying those and merging the two. Seems like that's the ultimate goal.
But also like population exploits, like realizing that like if these players aren't like bluffing the river, then like you said, it doesn't matter what you have, like.
Yeah.
Unless you beat a value range, like it's a pretty easy fold. And like I think that a lot of the theoretical players are like, this is the best hand I can have here with. I have to call this river shove. And I'm like, but you never
the bottom of my range, top of my range, but
and I'm like, that doesn't matter.
Time, no matter what.
And the players who are like, they land on the river and they're like, this is the worst hand I can ever have. I have to bluff. And I'm like, but he's gonna call. I'm like, why do you have to bluff?
Exactly. OSF left us. Damn it, I had another question, but I just lost my train of thought.
I was going to say, like, we've had quite a few poker players on here. Poker players have probably been successful for many years now. I would say out of all the ones that we've had, you seem to be, still have, like, no, you don't feel like you had burnout, to me. Like, the way that you speak about the game still shows a lot of, like, love for it, and, like, you...
Oh, yeah, I still love the grind. Like, every single time I go on a poker trip, it's like I'm getting ready for summer camp. I get to go see my friends. Like, I get to go like bluff some donks and value bet some fish. And like this.
Everyone else is talking about retirement or like, oh, you know,
yeah, I love this show.
And I do a lot more coaching now. When I'm like home, I don't really play. I don't even play like online Sundays anymore for the most part. And so like when I'm home, it's like I try to focus on my company and like, you know, being a husband and a father, and hopefully not in that order. And, you know, it's, that allows me to stay excited to go play. I mean, right now, like playing a tournament tomorrow sounds kind of shitty. But playing a tournament in, you know, 2 weeks for a week when I go to Florida, that's, I think I can get excited again.
Are you going to go to the Atlantis? I saw you like my tweet about having it at the Atlantis and not at the Bahamar. I mean, that's just so dusty. It feels terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on convention center space and cost and stuff
that's right.
But no, it's a clear pass for me, specifically because I qualified for the $1 million free roll.
Okay.
Is like 40 people or maybe a couple more seats, and then like your starting stack is based on your results. And so like my stack is, and the free rolls worth like 30 or 40 grand. Plus like playing the $1 million and the other stuff like that time of year there. So yeah, I mean, I can't do it all these days.
Won't be.
You know, maybe as I start talking to like poker sites and getting like sponsorships, if they have like a requirement for things they want me to play, like that would kind of open the floodgates again. But yeah, I mean, I don't need to play to make money, and like I'm just going to play the things I want to play when I want to play them.
Yeah, that's smart.
How are the poker players that you think are the best in the world, who you respect the most? It feels like someone you've obviously, I don't know, I can tell like you judge everyone's character pretty well. So like who are your people that you would give flowers to as your favorites?
Like the five that I think are the highest on my list are in no particular order is Alex Foxen, who obviously like, does a lot of the content with me at Chip Leader Coaching. But then like Bonomo, Steven Chadwick, and Adrian Mateos are like who I think are the absolute toughest.
Is there any reason why for any of those players?
I think mostly just because it's been the most difficult for me to decode what they have so far from a physical perspective and from a like poker perspective is just like I feel like I almost always know where the other players are at with their ranges and have like a really good understanding. You know, when the cards get flipped over where they're in a hand with someone else, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's pretty much what I thought. But then with the other guys, like, you know, I just don't see their cards, or like maybe I haven't got enough information yet. But yeah, like I think that those are definitely the toughest players out there. Foxen, just because like, I mean, him and I have like a kind of like a brother relationship, and you know, we go to absolute fucking war with each other, and like it doesn't matter if it's the bubble of the 50K where he stacked me this year or like some other tournament. Like we are out for blood every single hand we're in against each other. And like, it makes it really fun, you know? And like, I actually think that, you know, our ranges against each other are even wider because our like egos come into play. And it just adds an extra element to try to unwrap as you're making your decision.
The reason I asked that question is just because I know, like, you obviously check body language all the time. Like, as KBM says, everyone else is like focused on the theory, but you must look at these players in a slightly different ranking because of that sort of stuff. So
yeah, and I think Sean Winter's up there as well. I think he's super tough.
I was going to ask, how much have you ventured outside of poker? Like, have you looked at crypto? What are your thoughts on that kind of stuff? And I don't want to say the term NFTs because everyone just hates it, but that stuff as well.
The plan this summer was to make a bunch of money and start buying crypto again. I haven't really had exposure since like the way down on 38 or something like that. And so, yeah, I bought a bunch of, you know, Bitcoin and stuff since the summer and the success, but I don't really have like too firm of like an opinion on it. The NFT is something, a space that I really struggle with just because it makes sense to me that 99% of it's fucking going to be totally useless. Like I could see some of it having some long-term value. And I don't know if like the value comes from like flipping and like, oh, okay, this is hot right now. It's like, but I basically think of most of them as just like a shitcoin. They have no like intrinsic value. And like, maybe I just don't understand it. And like, that's actually a fact for sure. Is I definitely don't understand it. And I've never tried to really.
Sounds like you do.
Yeah.
Don't worry, we got chances for our audience to win them at the end.
That's kind of these at the end of the show. We're giving away. Everyone's sticking around, bro. And
yeah, I have a lot of friends who have made a lot of money, and like, you know, whether it's minting them and then, you know, selling them on the way up, or just holding the right ones for a while. But like, I've never really understood it. And like, I have a good friend who, I don't know if he wanted his name mentioned, but he was talking about the system reverse, I guess, for the Azukis and then the Bored Ape ones, and how that those might be kind of the likely winners that would have like retail and stuff like that. And he was like trying to explain it to me at dinner at Nobu this summer, and like, you know, I was like kind of getting there. I would say that like it made me more likely to see that, like, okay, like I can see how eventually people might be spending their real life in the space. And like, one of my favorite movies is Ready Player One, and so like I do kind of picture people living in the world like that eventually. And but I still don't necessarily know how the NFTs make that valuable, so I'm not sure.
There you go. So to 99% of the audience listening, your bag's worth zero, so sorry.
Yeah, there you go. So speaking with the spirit of the show, because it's direct radio, we like to talk about, you know, losses too. What are some of the biggest losses you've ever had? And then how do you recover from those?
I mean, I've lost $250,000 in the pits, like, you know, $200,000-$400,000 in the pits in a night before, just like drinking and being blacked out.
Fuck.
In poker, like before I was responsible, like I thought it was like really important to play the highest stakes cash games with the toughest opponents. And like, I ran it up to like over $1 million and down to $100,000 like 3 or 4 times. Before I like decided to, that I didn't have to risk such a large percentage of my net worth to be very successful. I once played a really high stakes big bet mix game where I didn't really know like any of the games, but the field was soft, and like I had probably $900,000 at the time and lost like $700,000. I mean, I've done some
trenches. Yeah, you're in the trenches.
Oh yeah, I'm not the man today that I once
was. You've cleaned up your act so well. I mean, yeah. I feel like you're like a father figure to me. I need to look up to you now. With these, I need to make some changes and be more like Chance. I'm gonna put like a picture on my wall, like be like Chance and touch it every day or something. That's
cool. My biggest problem for me is that like with like drugs and alcohol and degenerating or whatever, like I just have always felt. Or like past chances really felt that I was always operating at such a low percentage of my potential. And like, I've just been wanting in the last few years to, you know, at least operate at a higher mark.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing to say yourself, I guess, after all these nights, like you were clearly like hammered every single time. So like you can just strike out up to that. And but there was no like mental model that you did afterwards, like, oh, I need to do this better. It was just like, fuck, I was really, really drunk last night and then this happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Like chasing losses, being a degen, yeah, that kind of thing, right?
You operate at that like 20 to 15% of what you think your potential is for years and years and years, and eventually you just get tired of it, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm there. Episode 34 next week, I'm going to be a new man. I feel it.
And I was successful like being a degenerate. Like, yeah. I mean, Matt, you're a very successful person, but yeah, you're obviously a degenerate.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. There's some leaks to clean up. I might do. You might need a new coaching chapter, the chip leader coaching, anti-degenerate coaching, or something like that. I feel like a lot of Emilio Guerrera says you guys are sexy, and they pinned it. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, what are you thinking? I mean, I think I was touched on this a little bit, but what are you thinking for the rest of the year? Are you going to be grinding it out, or what's the plans for that?
I'm definitely going to play the August series in Florida, and then I'm going to play like a week or two leading up to the 300K in Vegas. Then I'll take a little time off. I'll play the 10K 5 Diamond, and my wife and I will take our kid to China to meet her grandma for the first time for 3 weeks. And then after that, there's like a few things to play towards the end of the year, like that big win series, the free roll, and then the $1 million.
Do you still think you'll be one of these old men at the table playing? Like, do you see that in your future? You don't think you'll have some like retiring moment? You have any like number you want to get to, or you have a lifestyle thing you want to get to before you stop this? Or you think you're just gonna be doing it for years and years?
I mean, I don't want to be like 50 and like traveling around the world grinding, but like maybe that would be like a good age to do it, because my daughter would like be in college and be gone or whatever, maybe that would be a good time to start traveling the world again. But like, there's so many things that, like, my daughter's this special age right now where, I mean, I missed a lot in the last 2 months, and like, I can't believe how much she talks. And, you know, we were catching this stuffed animal and I was like, wow, she actually caught it. Like, this is great. I'm like, I don't want to miss those things. So like, my focus in my life is not accumulating as much money as it, like, as possible, like it used to be. Like, my focus in life is like trying to be more content with what I have. And like, I don't have all the money, like I have plenty, but like focusing on being content, you know, like that's kind of like the biggest thing for me, because it's the most difficult. Like, I do always want more and bigger and better things. But yeah, that's my biggest goal in life, I would say, these days, is focus on being content. And that way it's so much easier to just like be a dad and, you know, stuff like that.
Makes sense. I think we all need that advice, probably, don't we? don't try and chase maximum money at all times.
It's so fun to run up the high score, but man, it can be stressful.
Do you ever play like relaxed games though? I'm just trying to think, like, when, if I was to play poker professionally, I just don't know. Does it become like a job? Do you still enjoy like relaxed games with friends, or is it like the only time you can really play is when you're playing?
We're like members of the social club here, and they have like this 300, which increased to a $500 buy-in recently. It's because of the summer, I guess. But it's just like people are limping and no one's bluffing, and like everyone's playing like a pure limp. Or I mean, it's literally one of like the softest.
Do you limp with them, or do you abuse?
And I'm obviously stuck in the game, but I go play, and it's like a nice way to network and meet people here in Nashville since we're new in town, and like I really like the group of guys that plays.
Yeah, I think that's tough though, right? I mean, who wants to play with you?
Well, and like,
with all due respect,
probably, I'm not even like trying, right? Like, it's like right, like limp, 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 and I have 30 big blinds and fives, and I'm like, I mean, this would be such a print to just like rip it in, but it's like, man, I know these five guys want to see the flop, and it's like, it's only $30 in equity I'm making. Like, all right, let's see if we can, you know? So it's like, I'm not really going for blood. Like, I am there to have fun and make friends. So it's a relaxed game, I think, is like the way you described it. It's good.
What are the other hobbies you're doing out in Nashville nowadays? Eating hot chicken, anything like that? What's the play?
Yeah, mostly just hot chicken. But I'm trying to get like, be a player on this little pickup soccer league that's once a week. Sundays. I used to play soccer pretty competitively, and I actually wanted to play in college, and my brother played D1 lacrosse at the time, and he was like, are you gonna play professional soccer? I'm like, no. And he's like, then don't play college. He's like, play club. He's like, have fun. And that was great advice. I got to find poker instead. But I need more competitive outlets here since I'm not playing as much poker. I think about getting back into jiu-jitsu or back into rock climbing, and like there are some things that are on the back burner, I guess. I'm gonna start grilling, actually, Matt. I'm hoping you'll go for that.
Me too. As soon as I saw it, I was like, I need that in my life.
Yeah, no, it's great. I ruined two briskets in a row. It's like I'm having a blast.
And we're gonna start hosting on Sundays, and like I need to be able to, you know,
No, it is solid, man. I definitely recommend a Traeger. I mean, it's kind of like Game Genie for barbecuing. It's like so easy. I'm saying that as I ruined two briskets. I know that. I did something.
So what actually happens when you ruin a brisket? Like,
It's just like, dry.
You had guests around, right?
You buy a dog.
Get a dog. I'd guess around, but luckily my wife cooked a tomahawk steak as well and a bunch of sides. So I had insurance. And then I also got some pizza nearby, so I had double insurance. So it wasn't that big of a deal. It was actually fine. I mean, everyone's disappointed, myself probably the most, but what can you do next time? 17 hours of wasted smoke.
I love that insurance tomahawk.
You always have to take food insurance. I'm always taking food insurance. You got to have like a spread because, you know, you never know what's going to suck. You need multiple bites. I'm big on food insurance.
That's good to know. See, that's probably the biggest advice I know I'm going to torch it a bunch.
Yeah, definitely have some insurance for yourself, Chance. But we're going to be wrapping it up here in a minute. Is there any other questions before I ask the closer here, OSF? Mando, you got anything you want to ask Chance
for? Go for it. Ready for the big closer.
Okay, the big closer here comes. Big fast pitch we ask everyone. But we want to know what advice you have for everyone not to get wrecked. It could be in any bass any discipline of life, but we want to hear your take on that.
Bankroll management, probably.
Bankroll management, a lot of discipline things. Get your mind right. Those have been kind of the themes of the show. And it, there are a lot of themes from a lot of successful people that come on. I mean, like always things that the human, you know, psyche struggles with, I feel like, especially people who are trading, playing poker. There's so many swings and volatility in your mental mindscape.
Is there anything specific on bankroll management? Do you have any like rules for it?
Not really. Like, because I'm up a bunch this year, like I'll risk a lot more in the fall and winter, just because like I have to pay taxes if I don't. So it's kind of like logical. But theoretically, you should be risking more in the higher edge spots. Like having like a flat unit is typically a mistake and will limit your growth. But like then you also have to have good awareness as to like, is this actually a higher edge spot? Like in poker, it's kind of simple. Like you can look at the field and like know like, okay, this is like a great spot. But like I'm sure this $1 million coming up is going to be like a pretty mediocre spot. You know, probably have like a 10 or 15% ROI, assuming the field's good. Like how much money do I really want to risk in that spot? And so it's like, that's kind of the way I would approach the decisions in general. You know, or like trading, you're like in range and it's just some like super difficult spot. Like you shouldn't just be necessarily blasting it when one day shit will just go down and you can just like have an incredible spot to buy. And like, that was actually something that Matt said to me like years ago when we first met, is that like, there's certain spots that are just like absolutely incredible for trading. And like, I mean, you could see, I remember he got this entry when we fell off the first time, like when we fell off the first time, you had just some sick entry on your like long and you made infinite.
Yeah, no, I think after 15 years of doing it, it's just a culmination of amazing spots. And if you wait for those spots, you crush. I don't take my own advice often, Chance.
I'm a coach. It's easier for me to say things, right?
Yeah. Like, ABM basically lives in digital Vegas. You know what I mean? Like,
But I have a lot of leaks and I fix other people's by giving them good advice that I know I should give myself is a big issue. But always working towards being more disciplined. This isn't a KBM psychology course today. We don't need to get into this, but maybe we should. We should do one of those one time. We'll bring Chance on for it because he seems to have the mental game down. We'll have Chance.
We got to optimize your mind course. I'll unlock for you, buddy.
Yeah, no, optimize your mind course. I need that. Let me get that. Unlock it for me. I appreciate that.